Well, Luke, it's great to have you back and have this conversation on this, unfortunately, very heavy topic on mental wellness and mental health. But before we do that, I know you and I talked last summer and had a really good conversation, but I've got some additional follow-up questions that I think people are going to really be interested to hear. This would be maybe not as intense conversation we had last time because it's going to be really about you,
sure,
and about your journey. But I want to start talking about your dad because I wasn't aware that your dad was such a powerful influence in the NFL. And now that I'm kind of into card collecting, I want to get some rookie cards of your dad's.
Absolutely.
But tell me a little bit about your dad. And then I think take that story about your dad and how that influenced you as a young man coming up, even before you played sports. Like, what did you learn from your dad, and how did he become such an important part of your life?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, first off, he, you know, grew up in a really small town in Ohio, on the border of, you know, Ohio and Indiana, called St. Henry. And, you know, I feel like, you know, just going back and seeing how he was raised and everything, you know, with my grandparents and, you know, all of his siblings, you know, it makes sense the way he turned out, you know, the way he did. And there's not a lot of people, you know, in that town. And so, you know, for him to come out of there and have the amount of success that he did, you know, going to Ohio State and playing there. And he was there 4 years, and then, you know, was, you know, fortunately he was drafted in the first round out of the Chargers, and, you know, spent the bulk of his career in Washington. But, you know, he had a lot of success, but it was all about the, you know, the hard work that he put in. You know, obviously he was athletically gifted. You know, he'd always growing up, he'd always tell us, like, you know, he's 6'6", 290. You can't coach that.
You know? That sounds like my dad. He always said that too.
That's his slogan, you know? And, so he's obviously really big, but he's super athletic and, you know, obviously worked very hard too. And that's, you know, that's something that I kind of took away from him at a young age, was just, you know, obviously I wasn't alive when he was playing and when he finished up, but I heard the stories and, you know, got to see some, you know, old VHS tape, you know,
that VHS.
He was on. Yeah. So, you know, I got to see a lot through that, but, you know, just the hard work. And that's something I've always tried to carry with me today, is just, going in there, you know, don't expect anything to be given to you. Everything that you go and do, you got to earn. So, it's all about hard work.
So to continue that, I think it's interesting to talk about legacy assets and, like, legacy athletes, because, you know, we do a lot of work with the Murray family and obviously Chris and Keegan. You know, people don't realize, but Kenyon was a pretty good player in his own day.
Yeah,
I mean,
absolutely.
He was a McDonald's All-American.
That's awesome.
You know, set tons of records back in Battle Creek, Michigan. And I remember the boys growing up that, you know, there was times when I think they felt like they had to play like their dad. Mm-hmm. Was there that pressure on you growing up where you felt, geez, my dad was this athlete? And once you realized, you know, how good he was, did you feel that, or did that give you a sense of you wanted to get your own identity and not really tie it to his?
You know, I felt it a little bit at times, but at the same time, it was all about, you know, finding that my own identity. But at the same time, I always tried to emulate him and, you know, try to live up to those expectations. The nice thing about it was that I played a different position in football.
What did he play?
He played left tackle in the NFL.
6'6", 290, you said?
Yeah.
That's not tight end.
No, that's not tight end level, you know. So he played left tackle in the NFL and was a guard in college. So I was never really on the offensive line growing up. I was, you know, a quarterback, running back, receiver, you know, throughout, like, you know, my young years and then into high school. You know, I didn't have to live up to that expectation, but, you know, in basketball, I always kind of felt like it, because he played, but he always told me I was better than he was. So, you know, that gave me a sense of confidence. And, you know, he always used up his fouls. I think he still has the record for the most fouls at his high school. So,
alignment playing football.
Exactly.
That makes sense.
Exactly. So I tried not to do that, but, you know, I found different ways I could emulate him.
You know, your time at Iowa had lots of ups and downs, like, you know, every athlete has.
Yeah.
It's not all, you know, unicorns and butterflies, right?
Yeah.
During the hardest moments, so, you know, you had, you know, coaching changes. You had some, there was an issue, not you personally, but on the team, with some gambling issues. There's lots of things. And that, you know, that's every team and every business in the world has these internal issues. How do you personally, Luke, deal with these things, and how do you look at adversity let's talk with like a team culture first. Like, yeah. Like, are there things that can happen in a team that are very, you know, cancerous that can cause a demise of a team that should be probably on paper good talent wise, yeah. but the culture isn't good. Where do you find lessons in these stories of adversity? And, you know, like I said, you went through a lot of ups and downs mm-hmm. at your time at Iowa. What was the biggest takeaways from the adversity that you went through?
Yeah, you know, first off, I feel like you gotta, you know, kind of try to, you know, weed out that negativity, you know, mm-hmm. that comes with it internally and stuff. You know, there've been times where, you know, people are negative in the locker room, and it's just not something that you can deal with on
and
a
you
team.
You know the ones, right?
Exactly. Yeah
you kind you of do. Stay away from them, right. I would assume. Yeah.
Yeah. Try to stay away from them, but also try to, you know, let them know, like, we need you. We need every good single point. Person on this team. So it's like, you gotta be able to try to adapt and you know, change the culture that we have. And, you know, at Iowa, we don't have the best recruits, you know, coming out of high school. You know, we're really,
stars are overrated.
Exactly. Yeah, they're exactly. Over, right. Overrated. Right. We've turned a lot of walk-ons.
Iowa proves that all the time.
Exactly. Yeah. You know, we've had a lot of walk-ons and, you know, low level recruits go and have really successful mm-hmm. careers. And, you know, I think that's just a testament to Coach Ferentz, but, a big part of that is the culture that, you know, they've set. And, you really got to buy into that. And the people that do, you know, tend to go on and have successful careers.
You know, as a leader on a team, obviously, and I made a statement about trying to avoid people, then it dawned on me that a real leader is trying to inspire and empower. So mm-hmm. what are some things you can say to an athlete that maybe is taking more than they're contributing? Like as a leader, what can you say to a freshman or sophomore, let's say you're a senior, mm-hmm. to get that kid to see things maybe a little differently?
Yeah, I mean, at a young age, it's hard sometimes to understand, you know, what kind of what's going on and how big of a, you know, a problem that they may be causing. Exactly.
Yeah.
And,
yep.
And there's just like so much that they can do at a young age that will really help them out later on in their career. That some people just don't always understand. So, you know, you can always just kind of show them that, try to tell them that, but it's more so, the actions that you do. And, you know, you can lead by example so much. I really believe leading by example is such a big thing. And, you know, with people, more people watch more than they listen. So it's like you go out and you hear these things, but then when you see people actually doing it, that's the stuff that really makes a big impact. So I always tried to, you know, make sure that I was leading by example and could pull some people with me.
I love that. You know, my mentors in my life, Luke, coming into the investment industry early. I did play a couple of sports in mm-hmm. college, but, you know, golf and
heck yeah, that's awesome.
And small time basketball, but
love it.
You know, so I remember emulating certain mentors and I remember literally copying their behaviors and stuff. And I think when you say lead by example, especially in sports, mm-hmm. it's such a big thing. Who were the leaders when you were a freshman at Iowa, when you got there and you were wide-eyed, bushy-tailed, and, you know, you're this kid coming in from Ohio? And who are the guys on the team that stepped up, either coaches you can think of or maybe some key players? And then maybe why? Why do you think these individuals were good leaders?
Yeah, for sure. That's a great question. For me, it was there were so many leaders, but there was like three that I can really think of that – I really, you know, tried to watch and emulate. And, you know, the first one is Sam Laporta. You know, him and
good
I were
one.
Exactly. Yeah. Him and I were in the same room, obviously, and we grew really close. So, you know, a lot of the things that I like to do was, you know, watch him on the field. And, you know, I'd sat right next to him in meetings. So we'd talk. And if there's something that he could help me out with, you know, we'd watch, you know, watch the film on it mm-hmm. and try to make those corrections.
So he was a senior when
he was just a year older than me.
Okay. Yeah.
So,
that's what I thought. He hasn't been in the NFL very long.
No. So, he was just someone I looked up to a lot. And so, you know, that's just someone that I felt was always a leader in my eyes. And I just tried to watch him. And then, you know, Jack Campbell, again, he's he's another guy that's just a year older, but
good one.
Yeah.
Two good ones there.
Yeah. He's a quiet guy. You know, I think, but he leads by example and through his actions, you know, doing conditioning stuff. He'd run
nobody better than
exactly
him by leading by example.
Yes. Yeah. So, I mean, he practices so hard, he practices the right way and, you know, goes about his business the right way. And just like, you know, he goes out and runs with the skill guys when we do our conditioning stuff. And then the last guy is Tyler Linderbaum. He was a couple years older and,
yeah.
You know, they're just, he's just another guy that works really hard and, you know, is really dominant. So, those are people that I really watched and, you know, obviously they were all great, vocal leaders, but it was more so their actions that really, you know, kind of drew me to them.
Sidebar here, but I went to high school with his dad.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Todd. Nice. So, oh, yeah.
That's he was awesome. A year younger than me at Solon.
Okay. That's yeah. awesome.
So small world.
Yep.
So your season in 2023 was cut short due to the injuries. Mm-hmm. So maybe talk a little bit about the specific injury, what you can and how you've healed back from that. And then also when you're on the sidelines and you're injured, mm-hmm. you know, we see this all the time, even March Madness and stuff and Super Bowl, you always see the athletes there that are the stars that can't play and your heart goes out for them because mm-hmm. they've worked so hard to get there. Now they're there.
Yeah.
What can you do on the sidelines when you're injured? And where do you see the benefit of being able to look at things differently when you're injured? You're not out there, so you can observe better.
Yeah.
Is there some advantage in that? And when you come back into the field, mm-hmm. you can say, hey, I've observed from the outside. I can see that we should be doing this better. You know, are there lessons in injuries? Yeah. I mean, there has to be.
Yeah, absolutely.
But what were your like personal learning lessons in injuries?
Yeah. So, you know, first off, I had a right ankle dislocation mm-hmm. And a crack in my fibula and tibia. But, you know, it all feels good now. It's real healthy. And, you know, but a lot of lessons that I can learn from that too. I mean, it's, you know, you really get to sit back and just kind of watch how everything goes and it's really hard, you know, but you know, the first thing I learned a lot about myself was just patience, you know, and just like good things really come with time. And, you know, it's obviously not the situation I wanted to be in, but, you know, it's a situation, you know, I believe that God put me in to go out and, it just kind of what it is. And, so I just tried to be the best I could. You know, I may have talked about this last year, when we met, but mm-hmm. read a book by John Gordon called The Energy Bus, and just not trying to be an energy vampire in the facility. So, being in there and every meeting and trying to just help out the guys in any way that I could, you know, I felt like I did a good job with that and, mm-hmm. Just tried to continue to be the leader that I could without being out on the field because, you know, obviously there are different roles that you can take on.
Yeah.
So I just really feel like I tried to do my best in doing that.
There's a saying that you're only as good as the lowest person on the totem pole.
Yeah.
So if you have an organization and you go down to, you know, even the people who, you know, are very valuable people mm-hmm. that they clean, they take care of the, you know, the janitorial services is like, you're only as good as a company, as good as the lowest person. I don't mean that as a quality of person, but like their job description. So you take like a football team, you know, you've got the people that wrap the ankles and, you know, my mm-hmm. dad was the team doctor for the basketball team.
Yeah,
so John Streif and Dr. Albright, you know, and I saw how the players treated my dad. They were unbelievably mm-hmm. good to my dad. And my dad, you know, was, I don't want to say just a doctor, but it's important, but he's not out there playing.
Right.
But he has a lot to do with those that are out there playing.
Yes.
So, you know, when you're on the sidelines, in a way, you're kind of the low man in the totem pole mm-hmm. now because you can't contribute on the field. So does that in itself give you a sense of pride that, hey, you know, I'm just as important as the quarterback or the guy that's out there playing my spot?
Yeah.
Instead of moping around on the sidelines, hoping that guy drops a ball. So when you come back, you know, that's a toxic mindset, right?
Right, definitely.
But I'm sure you've run across athletes that unfortunately have that mindset, mm-hmm. but I hope that a good team, most of the young men are cheering for success, even if you're injured.
Yeah, absolutely.
You have to.
Exactly. You have to. I mean, the mental turmoil that you're putting yourself in, you know, not cheering for your team is really hard. Mm-hmm. I'd say myself, but you know, every person on the team, you know, from the doctor to our janitor, to the, you know, the people that bring in our meals, you know, to everybody on the team is super important.
Yeah.
And, you know, we wouldn't be able to go out and play without any of those people. And, you know, to not be out on the field and mm-hmm. have to try to find that other role, like it was certainly hard, but, you know, I did find, you know, pride in that, mm-hmm. You know, being out, but still being able to help out and do whatever I could, to help out.
I know a lot of athletes, feel like fans can be a burden and I know mm-hmm. it can be tough. I mean, you'd want to sign every autograph that you can, but I've seen you at events and I've seen you take the time to acknowledge the fans and what they've done. So how much is that important to you as an athlete going on to the next level? I mean, you're going to have, you know, some crazy fans in the NFL.
For sure.
You know, how important is it to you that when you're walking off the field and there's a little kid there that looks up and, oh, that was you one day, man.
Yeah.
That was you looking at somebody.
Exactly.
Now, how important is it to you that you just maybe give that kid a thumbs up or just, you don't necessarily have to go over and sign something, but just let that kid know that, hey, I appreciate you.
Yeah, no, that's super important to me. Obviously, I was definitely one of those kids growing up, you know, going to Ohio State games. I remember at halftime, I'd make my mom leave so we could go down a couple minutes. We'd leave a couple minutes early just so we could go give high fives to the guys coming up to their locker room. So, you know, I mean, it's obviously super important to me. And, you know, I try to, you know, make sure I can, you know, give an autograph to that little kid or, you know, give a high five or something like that, that, you know, the people that are standing there, we've got a lot of great fans at Iowa. And, you know, obviously I know there are a lot of great fans out there. So, you know, I'm just looking forward to any opportunity I can to, you know, spread kindness and joy.
It's very easy for us to have unhealthy conversations with what I call the inner voice, right? I think we talked about this last time. It's the narratives we tell ourselves.
Yep.
It's not just athletes, it's business people, it's teachers, doctors, or whatever. How do you have your conversations with your, because we all have an inner critic.
Yeah.
You're human like me.
Yes.
It's easy for us to doubt our abilities. And how impactful is it that you have healthy conversations with yourself? So anybody listening right now that's a young athlete that's maybe not playing or maybe should be playing because that's what they think they should be playing. How do you stay in positive self-talk and what guidance or tips would you give for younger athletes to try to flip that switch when they start to tell themselves a negative story, catch yourself and say, hey, I need to tell myself something more positive.
Yeah, no, that's huge. Yep. I mean, that's almost the whole thing is just positive self-talk and, you know, being, you know, if you're on the sideline on a timeout, you know, and I remember one thing specifically, I knew it was third down and four, you know, on the 14 or 16 yard line in 2022. And there was a play that we were going to run that I was probably going to get the ball on it. And so I'm just on the sideline kind of talking to myself, like, you got this, like, just, go catch this, make the first down. And, but I was really telling myself that I was going to score and, you know, sure enough, I got it and I scored. So it was cool, you know, so
that's awesome. Like,
you know, the positive talk to myself was a, you know, a big thing for me, but, you know, also like just trying to not to let any negative, you know, things come to my mind because, you know, I feel like I spread a lot of positive energy to guys and, you know, I had a mental coach out when I was in California training and we were just kind of talking and, you know, I took this like Gallup strengths test kind of thing, not that exact, but, you know, just off the data that he got and we talked for like 20 to 25 minutes before and then he really dissected me and he told me that I need to be a better teammate to myself. So
I love that.
You know, that's a big thing for me now that I think of a lot. It's just like I spread a lot of positive you know, energy to other people and I could just be better, you know, talk more positive to myself.
So a follow-up question to that is I'm thinking in my head right now watching, and I don't know when this is going to post, but obviously it's going to be over, but watching March Madness and you've got someone like Cooper Flagg who had this opportunity to his Christian Laettner moment, but he missed the shot.
Right.
And today they had a video of him out there on the golf range hitting golf balls by himself, you know? So let's say you get in that game, Luke.
Yeah.
And the ball hits you right in the hand and you drop it.
Yeah.
So what's the self-talk then right there?
Yeah, I mean, that's really
hard.
Because
that doesn't happen, you know, you don't always catch the ball.
No.
Right?
No.
Like Cooper Flagg had to tell himself some story pretty quickly. I got to move on from this instead of just starting to go downhill.
Exactly.
Yeah.
You know, and yeah, I mean, that's a lot.
So what do you tell yourself? Let's say that ball hits your hands, you drop it.
Yeah, it's hard. You got to go for the next one. I mean, obviously it's a big moment, you know, in the final four to miss, you know, miss a shot for him, but you know, it's,
He'll be back.
And no, definitely. And you know, you just, it's like Mark Andrews, you know, he dropped a pass in the, on a 2-point conversion in the playoffs.
Yes.
And, you know, it's just,
or a kicker,
exactly, you know? A kicker missing a kick, you know, you just got to tell yourself the next one, you know, it's hard. You know, you probably let a lot of people down, but
you signed up for it. That's the thing. You knew as an athlete that you want those positions.
Yeah.
Like, there's nobody on the field that wants to catch the ball at the last second than you.
Exactly.
Right?
Yes.
But you also know with that comes, and anybody watching this, it's, you know, take a risk in business. You take a risk in a relationship. There's always a chance of it not working out.
Right.
And then what's your mindset when that happens? And then think the old Stoic philosopher Epictetus said, or as Marcus Aurelius said, it's not what happens to you, it's what happens for you.
Yeah.
It's like even a dropped pass can be an opportunity for you to become a better tight end.
Yeah, for right? sure. Yes, definitely. And you just learn so much, you know, not only about yourself, but about the people around you. And, you know, I think that's, you know, there's probably a lot of people going over to Cooper Flag and, you know, putting their arms around him.
I feel terrible for his parents.
Yeah, yeah, for sure. Yeah. And, you know, just, you know, it's a tough moment. But, you know, I'm sure that he'll, you know, be stronger because of it, you know.
It reminds me of a time when my son was getting recruited and I was walking for golf. I was walking out at a course in St. Louis area, and I was with Kansas's coach, golf coach, which is, you know, one of the best golf programs out there. Mm-hmm. And funny thing, he wasn't there recruiting my son. He was there recruiting somebody else, but my son got a chance to play in front of him.
Yeah.
And I was asking him, I said, you know, as a parent, you know, what do you look for in a competitive Division I golfer? And he said, surprisingly, every kid thinks I'm here to watch you make those bombing drives and those 50-foot putts and all that stuff. He goes, no, I want to see you snap hook a shot out of bounds, and then what do you do next?
Yeah.
And that always stuck with me.
That's great.
It's like, you know, a lot of these kids get all nervous when they're around these coaches out recruiting and stuff. And I think a lot of coaches, though, they want to see you fail, but they want to see what you do next.
Right.
Every kid can hit a 300-yard drive in that level.
Yeah.
Everybody at your level can catch a football,
yeah.
you know. But what do you do when you drop one that you should have caught?
Exactly.
You hang your head, you go to the bench and throw your helmet down, you know.
Right.
Do you cause a penalty the next play because you weren't focused?
Right.
I think coaches are really looking at, and I think for the Gen Z generation, you know, everything's results oriented, but I think a lot of people want to see what you do after something happens not in your favor. That shows your resiliency.
For
would
sure.
you agree with that?
Yeah, definitely would agree with that. And just your perseverance to move on.
So last time we talked a little bit about your family, because you come from a very strong, loving family. Mm-hmm. You know, not everyone comes from families like that. I was fortunate too, Luke, and we called the Leave It the Beaver family I grew up in.
Yeah.
But how important is support systems in sports? So let's take, you have your family.
Yep.
You know, again, a lot of athletes don't have the loving, supporting families like you and I had.
Yeah.
But how important is a support system on the field? So you have your coaching staff and your teammates, because you love them like family, because they are your family for a long period of time.
Yeah.
But then off the court, you know, the girlfriends, the relationships, the teachers, people like that. How important is that support system if you can separate those two?
Yeah, no, they're super important. You know, first off, starting with, you know, coaches and teammates, like that's, you know, the people that you really are playing for. You know, obviously you play for your family and everything like that as well, but the you go out there and, you know, especially at an away game, there's 70 players and however many coaches and, you know, support staff that are there. And that's who you're playing for. It's all of you guys against everybody else, you know, and that was our big thing. So obviously that's super important. You know, you want to make the play for the guy next to you more than I want to make it for myself. And that's what I kind of, you know, really say.
That's a great attitude, right?
You know, and, you know, that's the first thing. But, you know, obviously then, you know, for my girlfriend and, you know, the people outside, you know, the teachers and everything, like that's super important too. Mm-hmm. You know, my girlfriend is super important to me and someone that, you know, I really, rely on a lot. So, you know, to play for her, you know, but then also to have those relationships outside of it. Yeah, it's just a super important thing. And the teachers too, I mean, I've had a lot of great teachers at Iowa, but, you know, obviously the ones in high school are, you know, some people that I'm, you know, close to now still. And, you know, they're all super supportive, and you know, I try to show that as well.
You know, a lot of athletes struggle with identity. And these would be for maybe athletes that don't have a chance to play after college or high school. Do you have any suggestions for younger athletes that they want to be the next Luke, they want to be the next Keegan, but they don't have it for whatever reason? Is it difficult to make that shift? Do you see former football players that have a hard time getting back into, you know, the non-football life? And then what advice would you give for athletes? Because the statistics aren't in your favor. I mean, it's hard. I don't know what it is, but I know in the NBA, it's
very selective.
Yeah. And I can't imagine it's much different for NFL. But what advice do you give for an athlete? Maybe they decide their sophomore year that they don't want to play baseball anymore.
Yeah.
But their whole life, they were kind of pushed to being an athlete. Now it's like, they don't want to do it anymore. What advice or guidance would you give for anybody out there to help maybe get a new identity or to find a way to not be so identified with the football Luke?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I, you know, that I'm sure there are more interests outside of, you know, that one sport. You know, find something else that you can, you know, pour a lot of energy into. And, you know, whether that's, you know, riding a bike or, you know, going on a walk, you know, or, you know, something like reading a book, you know, there's so many things that you can go and do. And, I think that, you know, finding a new thing that you can go out and have fun doing is a really important thing. You know, there's obviously a lot of stories like that where people just get burnt out of, you know, doing one thing. And, you know, like playing, for me, it was like, I didn't want to play basketball year round because I didn't ever want to get, you know, burnt out of it. I mm-hmm. liked the idea of, you know, having the, you know, growing up, I loved basketball.
You were a multi-sport. Exactly, multi-sport. Athlete, yeah.
But, yep. you know, my parents always told me, like, you got to play all these sports. And I wanted to. And, you know, so I played football and basketball and, you know, ran track and field. And, you know, sophomore, junior year, that's when I really decided I wanted to put all my, you know, my eggs into the football basket. Yeah. But I didn't ever want to get away from playing the other sports right. that I did because it was so much fun. And it
gives you a break from exactly. the real job.
Yes, exactly. You know, and I've just heard so many stories of, you know, people playing baseball year round, basketball year round. And it's just, you know, just that burnout is really hard. So, you know, for that, I'd just say play three sports. But, you know, when you get burnt out and, you know, that's your only sport that you want to do, it's, you know, you got to go and find a new interest and a new hobby that really interests you. And there's a lot out there for sure.
So what's the impact of expectations? So coming out of high school, you had a set of expectations. Now going into the NFL, it's like there's another set of expectations there. Are you finding different set of expectations going from, say, high school to Division I football at a high yeah. level? Because obviously the level gets higher. Yeah. I'm assuming the expectations get higher along with it.
For sure. I mean, it's hard. Yeah. I mean, I haven't really even thought about like all of that at this moment. It's just going out and trying to be the best, you know, prospect I can be yeah. at this point and just trying to get into shape, you know, and football shape. Cause I know
there's only so much you can control at this point, right?
Yeah, exactly.
It's gotta be a little frustrating.
Yeah, definitely. You know, once I kind of figure out a little bit more, you know, what team, you know, I'm going to be going to play for and, you know, it'll be nice to kind of, you know, figure that stuff out, you know, when it gets there. And then maybe some expectations can come, but, you know, from, you know, Division I to college football, it's just, you know, my high school is, there's not a lot of, you know, we had 350 kids. There weren't a lot of, you know, power five yeah. athletes. I was the first, you know, I believe. And, you know, it's just, there's a lot of expectations that come with that. I just tried to really just focus on myself and just try to do what I could do. All the little things that Iowa teaches you to do, yeah. just do all of those right. And just let the rest take care of itself. You know, I thought I handled that well, so I should probably take that same mindset into the NFL.
Iowa definitely taught me a lot. Will.
Yeah.
We talk about the process a lot, right? Because when you were a young man, you had this dream of making it mm-hmm. to the NFL. Well, you're right there.
Yeah.
Okay. Are you taking time to enjoy the process? There's a lot of talk about being present in people's mm-hmm. lives. And so there's things I look back at my life at 59 and times where I didn't enjoy the process. I got successful, but it was something about the journey that wasn't enjoyable for me.
Yeah.
Now with this app we have and kind of in the startup world, mm-hmm. I'm a lot more time I'm taking to be present of the journey. Is Luke doing that? And can you do a better job yourself and being more present in your life as these things unfold that right now you don't have a lot of say over?
Yeah. I feel like I could do more. You know, I there's a lot that I'm really thinking about, you know, as far as, you know, we got a lot of interviews and, mm-hmm. You know, I'll do all these workouts and then, you know, here we go, you know, the draft's in 3 weeks and then I'll be sent off, you know, going and doing all the working out and stuff and obviously practicing. But, you know, there are times where I'm really sitting there and I'm like, you know, this is all I've ever wanted. This is what I've dreamed of my whole life. And to finally be in this position, I really got to, you know, be happy and just not take it for granted.
You're not lucky. You've worked your tail off.
Yeah.
But there's something about that moment that you have to savor because it's going to go fast.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah. It's a... a lot of people say it's just, you know, like they talk about college and how fast it goes.
Yeah.
When, you know, you hear it as a freshman and you're like, oh, okay, yeah, like, we'll see how fast this goes. And now, yeah, and now I'm here and I'm the one telling these freshmen that it goes by fast, and it really does. So, you know, you just really got to enjoy the moment. And, I definitely could be better about that.
Yeah. What's your go-to thing? I have like two things that are my go-to when I get to, whether it's just doubt or I'm critical or I'm having a very difficult time with what I went through. I have like two things that are my go-to. What's Luke's go-to one or two things to get you kind of recalibrated?
I love to, you know, call my girlfriend.
Yeah.
You know, that's a big thing, you know, when we're not together, you know, now we're pretty much going to be together now. We've done long distance. So, just like talking to her and, you know, just kind of, you know, telling her how I'm feeling and just the feelings is really big for me. And, just, you know, like this is what, you know, I wanted when I was a 18-year-old, you know, to be in the same position that I'm in right now. And it's a lot of it is just talking about those feelings. 'Cause I feel like another time, you know, I really reflected on that was when I was being, you know, talking to the media at Iowa. You know, you just kind of, I feel like it just, I like talking about it, not keeping the thoughts within is a big thing. So I'd say that's really the main thing is just kind of talking about the feelings and talking about, you know, how I'm feeling about things.
What's the best part about football for you? Like what's the thing that you just like, man, when this ends, it does for every athlete.
Yeah.
What are you going to miss the most?
You know, the relationships that you build, you know, with my teammates and, you know, the coaches, all that stuff. That's really hard to find in a lot of other places and, you know, companies and stuff like that in other fields, I feel at least. And, you know, there's just so many people, trying to achieve the same goals as I am. And, you know, there's a lot of just like-minded people that we come and you just build so many great relationships. So I just feel like that's the biggest thing. And then, I think I was thinking today during our lift, I was like, one day I feel like I'm really just going to miss, you know, my body feeling sore, you know, just like when I'm not working out and training for the NFL and you know, for football and stuff. So I'd say that, you know, that's something too. So who knows?
Yeah. You don't see 20-year careers in the NFL.
Yeah. not very much. No.
So what about the grind that you like? You know, I think as an athlete, we like to push each other. And I know when I played, I always liked it. But then there was something addictive about the grind. You know, what about that do you find the most appealing as an athlete?
Yeah, you know, I feel like it's, you know, the results that come from the grind. Like, obviously, it's hard to wake up at, you know, 5 a.m., you know, every single day during the season and get up for the lift or the meetings and then for practice after that. You know, it's hard to do all that stuff, but, you know, when you go out and you play a game and you win, it's super rewarding. And you know, all the work that you put in that week is so worth it. And, you know, obviously our bodies are going through a lot too. So just like making sure you're staying on top of that, but you know, it's hard to go in there and do all that treatment, and then come back and you know, put your body through it again, but you win and it's just like, it's awesome. So, I mean, the grind, it's hard at times, but, you got to love every single second of it because you're working, you know, constantly towards getting that next win, and everything like that. And
it's almost like you got to convince yourself that you're honored to be in this position.
Yeah.
You know,
for
how
sure.
many people would love to have your physical talents and have your mindset and stuff that
totally
they just don't. Mm-hmm. They just don't. Not everybody can be the same. And so, but they can in being a better teacher, a better doctor, you know, a better podcast host. I mean, we always can become better.
Yeah.
So I guess as I wrap this up, what would be like the one mental wellness or mental health, I hate that term, but let's say mental wellness advice you could give to anyone aspiring to be the best in their field. What's like the one thing that you've learned in your life that you could suggest that people do to help their mental health?
Yeah. I mean, just spreading positivity. And like I said before, being a better teammate to yourself, I think is really big.
That.
You know,
great.
Being positive, having those thoughts, is really important. And, just that positive self-talk is something that can go a long way. So, whether you're, you know, trying to become the best podcaster or, you know, the best radio host, whatever it is, you know, go out there and be the best you can, but, you know, also give yourself some grace. You know, there's a lot that goes into it, and, you need to stay positive and, just, you know, be your best self.
Yeah. I mean, at my age at 59, I wish and I hate saying this term because I don't like going back in time too much, but I wish I wasn't beating myself up all the time. Mm-hmm. I mean, just constantly never satisfied with anything. And mm-hmm. again, that made me very competitive. Like I wanted to be successful in business, but I never defined what successful was. For me, it was always about money. And then, you know, when my son and my wife died, I realized pretty quickly that's a very shallow way to live your life. If that's the only thing you're doing is for money. So it took me a long time to learn that lesson. Yeah. And life will teach you lessons.
For sure.
Sometimes it's through death. Sometimes it's through addiction. Sometimes it's through an injury. Mm-hmm. You know, there's meaning and purpose behind these things. So I got a couple just open-ended questions for you here. So what book are you reading right now?
Yeah, I'm reading The Power of Positive Leadership by John Gordon.
Okay.
I'm currently reading that. And then the next one is The Let Them Theory by Mel Robbins.
Yeah.
So that's
she's just on the Rich Roll podcast.
Is that right?
Yeah.
So that's the one next one on deck. So, you know, hopefully that'll just, you know, help myself out, not trying to listen to the outside noise. Obviously there's a lot of outside noise that comes with, you know, being an athlete and, you know, playing for a big program like Iowa and then going into the NFL. So it's just, you know, trying to let them, you know, kind of, I don't know. I've just read the back of it. So I don't think I need to
read the book because the whole title is let them be. I mean, you can't control what other people think or do or say, and you can't control how successful someone else is or how much more money they have or looks or whatever. It's like, you have it's hard enough to control me.
Yeah, for sure.
How the hell am I going to control you? It's like, but we spend a lot of our time outside worrying about what other people think.
Right.
And what's your favorite sports movie?
I like Remember the Titans. That's a great one.
Good one.
Yeah.
Mine's Caddyshack.
Oh, that's
is that
good
a sports
too.
Movie?
Yeah, I'd say it is.
Favorite sport to play outside of football, and I'm going to take basketball off the table. So you can't play basketball now.
Yeah, track and field then. Yeah.
Okay.
I loved that in high school.
What did you do in track and field?
Yeah, I ran the 400, 4x2, 4x4, and then did high jump.
Okay.
So, you know, 400 and high jump were probably, those are probably my two
best. Is golf in the top five?
I'm not very good at golf. Yeah, top 10.
Okay.
Golf. Yeah.
I bet when you hit it, it goes a freaking mile. It just doesn't go straight.
Yeah, I mean, sometimes it does if I hit it right. But you know, I'm not great at golf. But you know, I probably wouldn't ever also see myself in a track and field setting either. There's a higher probability I'm going to go play golf. You know, than getting out and doing
well
track.
Golf when done with football, you'll have lots of chances to play some great courses.
Exactly.
Who would be your top two dream teams to end up playing for?
Oh, that's so hard.
And I know Pittsburgh Steelers first because that's my favorite team.
There you go.
I'd love to see you be a Steeler, man. That would make my whole draft.
That would be awesome.
Who's your two favorite teams?
You know, growing up, obviously it was the, you know, Washington, you know, Commanders. And so, I mean, that would be cool. Not really sure. You know, I obviously don't have a preference.
I know you don't.
It's so hard.
It's a tough question.
Yeah, it's a very tough question. And then,
I just
didn't know
if you had a childhood favorite team.
Yeah, that would have been them.
Washington.
Yeah, so it was just because, you know, my
dad
played for them. Yeah, so they had a really great year last year. So, you know, I'd say that was...
They're an exciting team.
Yeah, for sure.
Okay, so after football, after sports and all this, what do you see yourself doing for a career, I guess.
Yeah, it's so hard to think about. You know, I want that to be, you know,
entrepreneur maybe, or
an entrepreneur or something like that. Yeah, so probably something like an entrepreneur. You know, that's what I went to school for, enterprise leadership, and you know, so something a bit within business. You know, obviously I've you know, met a lot of great mentors. Mm-hmm. You know, with Jordan Montgomery being one of them. You know, he's done a lot of great things, you know, through his keynote speaking, and you know, obviously I just like to, it would be cool to, you know, be in that realm somehow, you know, so who knows?
You're
there's a lot
that.
Of a
I can
lot
give
of
you
things.
Some guidance on startups too, but
there we go. Yeah, that'd be great.
What not to do.
Yeah.